Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What up, everybody?
It's Monday, just in case you lost track of the days, and this is Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan. We are broadcasting you from our homes during quarantine. We are separated, though. Unfortunately. Or fortunately.
I mean, actually, I will say fortunately, just because this weekend, Shia, randomly, Friday night, I ended up having like this thing in my throat where it felt like I was like swallowing nails.
Oh my
and
God.
I ended up feeling very sick the next day where I was like trying to figure out, oh my God, I don't want to go to an urgent care because I'm afraid of trying, you know, trying to stay away from people and catching COVID-19. Yeah. And so, you know, obviously we had James Simmons. He's our medical expert here. He's a nurse practitioner. And so you were like, well, text him, call him, do something. Yep. And so I called him and I was texting him and he was like helping me like get through everything, like telling me what to go buy and telling me what medicines to get. And he also was like, could you take a picture of the inside of your throat? And I was like, this is just crossing all types of boundaries and levels. And we're coworkers. I'm like, do we need to sign an NDA first? What are we really doing here?
He's going to release your throat pictures soon.
I mean, but I will tell you, I took a very artistic throat picture.
Oh my God.
And
how?
You know, I don't know. Well, it did talk about my mouth, you know, my mouth being kind of around my phone.
Okay, this is
I had to wipe it down a little bit. But yeah, I ended up figuring that out. And luckily, I got to rest. I think it was my body telling me we have to take some time and rest.
Of course.
And so, yeah, I feel tons better now. But it was just wildly, you know, how crazy actually talking and texting a nurse and being like, this is what's going on. I'm giving you all the details and then taking these widely, insanely, like very intimate photos, I feel like.
Well, that is the future, Ryan. I mean, you know, that's why all these telehealth companies are popping up and doing so well because they're needed. And because if you don't need to go in person to a doctor, and also depending on your insurance situation, a lot of these companies provide these services for free and you could literally go on and then say what your symptoms are, show pictures, and they can diagnose you or at least figure out what's going on.
Yeah,
or if you actually need some more serious care. Yeah.
It's crazy.
First time for everything. First time.
Yeah.
You know what's going to be a first time for everything moment for me?
Which is what?
I'm going to be dyeing my hair tonight for the first time on my own, which is like pretty basic. Most people have done it like when they were 13.
Yeah.
I'm 36 and I have never done it myself. And let me tell you,
why don't you just let your hair grow? Like, and the cut, like, why does it even matter?
Because I'm starting to get a lot of whites. This is not about roots. This is about whites. And
what is whites?
Whites, it's straightened.
Like
I mean, you see your
like gray hair.
I have a lot of gray hair showing up, but it's interesting to let it grow out and see like what would happen because I think I would. I mean, I would probably look like a sexy older woman, you know?
Don't we talk about accepting yourself and accepting
I'm accepting
your growth as a woman and as a person in your elderly years?
Well,
I just think, you know, I have to kind of call you out here.
No way.
You got to practice what you preach. And if you can, you should let them grow out a little bit.
Well, I am, and I'm acknowledging it. So part of that is acceptance. I've accepted it. I'm sharing it with everyone. Okay, time to go.
No, you're you're trying to get rid of them. It's not the same thing.
How am I supposed to remain popular on TikTok when I've got whites growing in? Can you tell me that? Can you
answer
me that?
I think the first thing you have to accept is TikTok may not be for you. I'm just saying. But it's okay. We got to move on. We got plenty of show to get into.
God.
Let's get into a couple of these headlines.
Yes. All right. You're making me think about a lot here, Ryan.
You should.
Existential crisis happening right now. Okay. South Korea is going to begin sending COVID-19 testing kits to the U.S. as soon as tomorrow afternoon. That comes from an official with South Korea's Ministry of Foreign Affairs who told that to CNN. So they have said the test received preliminary FDA approval as a result of a conversation between their president and President Trump last month. The biggest news today, though, Bernie Sanders came out to endorse Joe Biden for president.
I wish you would have just stopped at saying Bernie Sanders came out.
Yeah, right. They did it in a live stream conversation between the two of them, and they talked about the minimum wage and oversight of the coronavirus emergency loan program, among other issues.
To support your candidacy, which I endorse, to make certain that we defeat somebody who I believe, and I'm speaking just for myself now, is the most dangerous president in the modern history of this country. A president, and you made this point, who downplayed this pandemic, who ignored the advice that some of his people were giving him, who has not used the Defense Production Act early on so that we could produce the masks, the gowns, the gloves, the ventilators that our medical.
Well, there you go.
It was really sweet. It was a sweet of a moment because it just looks like when you're watching it, Joe Biden was kind of getting emotional. And I think at the end of the day, no matter how hard they were going on each other at one point during these debates and all these things that we were watching, at the end of the day, it shows that they are just friends. And it was really sweet. It was sweet.
Are they really friends or are they just friends for show?
Either way, it showed me that they were friends. Cute. It was a cute moment. It was very cute.
News coming out of Texas. We're sending our love to everyone listening in Texas right now. Governor Greg Abbott is expected to issue an executive order outlining how and when Texas businesses will reopen. As the state continues to battle the pandemic, Abbott says he's starting to shift his focus on protecting lives while restoring livelihoods. Now, Austin Mayor Steve Adler said he will continue to follow advice from public health officials who have said it's too early to establish a timeline right now. That was somewhat trending in the news top of the hour right here on Let's Go There. More in the next hour on the show, so stay tuned for that. But coming up, Trump's Twitter was on fire this weekend with many of his posts hinting at firing everyone's favorite doctor, Anthony Fauci. Is this just another case of the blame game? That's next. Okay, so President Trump on Sunday retweeted a post by Deanna Lorraine, a Trump supporter and former congressional candidate in California, and it included the hashtag Fire Fauci. Say it ain't so, right, Ryan?
I know. It's ridiculous.
She wrote, Fauci is now saying that had Trump listened to the medical experts earlier, he could have saved more lives. Fauci was telling people on February 29th that there was nothing to worry about and it posed no threat to the U.S. public at large. Now, she was referencing an interview earlier on Sunday with CNN where Fauci said the government, quote, could have saved more lives if it had acted sooner on the coronavirus threat.
Sanjay Gupta said this is all because we got started too late in the U.S. Is that right? Do you agree?
You know, it isn't as simple as that, Jake. I'm sorry. I mean, to just say this is all happening because we got started too late. Obviously, if you look, could you have done something a little bit earlier? Would have had an impact, obviously. But where we are right now is the result of a number of factors. The size of the country, the heterogeneity of the country. I think it's a little bit unfair to compare us to South Korea, where they had an outbreak in Daegu and they had the capability of immediately, essentially, shutting it off completely in a way that we may not have been able to do.
So what does this all mean? And could Fauci actually be the latest in this blame game that Trump seemed to be doing with other people as well? Karen Ockham is back with us. She's a veteran LGBT journalist and a news editor for the Los Angeles Blade. Karen, it's so great to have you on again.
Thank you. I hope you're all doing well. Hanging in.
You as well.
For you. Now, let's just jump right in because it's obviously crazy that we're seeing stuff like this trend. Fire Fauci when he seems like he is the only person near that administration that actually has some common sense. What are your thoughts?
Well, first of all, this is Trump you're talking about, so it's not so crazy. So you have to start thinking, okay, if he's just doing this for distraction, what is he distracting from?
Oh.
And you might notice that Peter Navarro, who's kind of another nut job, was on 60 Minutes to talk about the pandemic and screwed up totally. That was on 60 Minutes as well. Now, the whole thing is Trump and Trump's reelection. And so what we're seeing is he doesn't care about the deaths. He has no empathy. He has no understanding of this whatsoever. All he's thinking about is the Dow Jones, is getting the economy reopened, because he's only going to get elected or reelected if the economy is good. That's one of the big things for him. And the economy is not only not good, now you have, governors saying, such as our own governor here, Gavin Newsom, or LA County, as well as LA County, saying, we're going to have to extend this stay at home until May 15th, maybe indefinitely, who knows? What Fauci says is the virus is going to determine when the country gets open again.
Yeah, and do you think there's a way to find that balance where the economy can rebound somehow while protecting citizens' lives and health?
Well, that's what they're trying to figure out now. And as a matter of fact, in Gavin Newsom's news conference today, he does a daily news conference, which you can see on Facebook or on Twitter. His daily news conference is noon our time, Pacific time. And what he said is that tomorrow they are going to start talking about plans to potentially reopen the economy, the different steps that need to be taken, and what that would entail, which is testing more people, obviously, finding hotspots, but slowly maybe reopening different areas. What Fauci keeps talking about, November.
Oh, yeah. That's true. It's coming up before we know it. So I do you think Fauci could be fired, and would that look good or bad for Trump?
Oh, very bad. I mean, you know.
It would look terrible.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Fauci is the only one who's trusted now. And as a matter of fact, Hogan Gidley, who was the White House deputy press secretary, came out with a statement in reaction to this saying, President Trump is not firing Dr. Fauci. The president's tweet clearly exposed media attempts to maliciously push a falsehood about his China decision. Are you ready for this? Wait for this.
Uh-huh.
In an attempt to rewrite history, It was Democrats and the media who ignored coronavirus, choosing on impeachment instead.
Of course.
And what choosing to focus on impeachment instead. And when they finally did comment on the virus, it was to attack President Trump for taking the bold, decisive action to save American lives by cutting off travel from China and Europe. Dr. Fauci has been and remains a trusted advisor to President Trump. Yeah, right.
Karen Oakham, thanks as always. We love having you on and wishing you all the best during this time.
Thank you so much. You too, and all your listeners as well.
Yes, and you can read Karen's work. She's a veteran LGBT journalist and news editor for the Los Angeles Blade, losangelesblade.com. Now, Trump said in today's presser before the show that he is not firing Fauci and thinks he has been great, and they are on the same page. When asked why he retweeted the hashtag Fire Fauci and, threw it out to his 76 million followers yesterday, all he had to say was this: I retweeted somebody I don't know. Case, I guess. We're moving into top stories in pop culture and entertainment news. What's the tea, Ryan?
Okay, so Justin Bieber and Kendall Jenner are facing some backlash for their tone-deaf comments about privilege and, of course, COVID-19. That's coming up next, y'all. We're back with What's the Tea, our entertainment pop culture stories of the day. And if you hear anything in Cheer's background, it's a lawnmower. But y'all know we are quarantining at home.
Exactly. And people are continuing to mow their lawns. It happens.
It is what it is. But let's dive into pop culture right now, because Justin Bieber and Kendall Jenner are now facing backlash for their tone-deaf comments about being privileged and the coronavirus. So here's what happened. Basically, in an Instagram live session on Friday, they decided to, you know, it was Justin Bieber, it was his wife, Hailey Bieber, or Hailey Baldwin. And basically, they dished about how fortunate they were while isolating in their respective Calabasas mansions during the coronavirus pandemic. Here's that clip.
How blessed are we to be able to, like, a lot of people, obviously, in this time are, you know, have a crappy situation, you know, and they look at us and obviously, you know, we've worked hard for where we're at. So it's like, it's, we can't feel bad for, you know, the things that we have. But I think just us taking that time to acknowledge that there are people who are struggling is important.
So after hearing them basically, you know, talk about this, and I just don't understand, once again, why are we here? And do you think they are deserving to be dragged after hearing them talk about this?
Well, one, I think a lot of people are in crappy positions and are very angry and frustrated because of it. So listening to celebrities and people that have a ton of money just talking about that, it could be triggering. However, I don't think it's, his awareness is wrong. He was saying something that's very clearly a reality for them. And if anything, I don't think he should be applauded. I don't think that we should be celebrating what he said. It just is what it is. Like, he just basically said, we're blessed. Yeah, we've worked our asses off and we're in a good place. But it is a real thing when you do contemplate how many people are suffering. That's a real comment. I don't know why people are dragging them for that honest comment. It wasn't like they were being tone deaf about it. They were being real. That's just like their reality.
So I kind of agree with you, but I mostly disagree with you, just because think there's an idea and there's and we talk about this all the time, kitchen table talk. You don't have this type of conversation. Okay. Wait a second. Yeah. You don't have this type of conversation in front of hundreds of thousands of people on IG Live. People don't understand that. When people are going through terrible things, people wondering how they're going to get food on their table, Shira, that the last thing they want to hear is someone talking about, oh, we are so blessed right now. And it's just, we really need to take
acknowledging that would be tone deaf.
Let me finish. It just makes no sense. And I do understand why people have taken this out of, like, why are you having this conversation right now? There's other things to be talking about, and you feeling blessed about your life and having this moment in your Calabasas mansion. Guess what? A lot of people are not blessed in their current life. So just having that reflective on a live platform, they could have had that on their own FaceTime call, but doing that in front of hundreds of thousands of people, I think that feels very tone deaf. And here's what some people on Twitter said. Joshua said, thank God they're acknowledging us. So grateful. Suddenly my debts are wiped clear and I'm no longer unemployed. Seth said, I cannot take it anymore with celebs and influencers making COVID comments. Maybe just be a human. You are not an expert. Shut up and bake banana bread.
That's their human. But the issue is that's their human experience, whether we like it or not, whether we feel good or bad about ourselves because of it. Like, we watch these Instagram lives. If they were put together and fake, then we'd call them out on being fake. This was a random IG live they decided to do on the weekend.
It's
because
not
they can.
Random, but no, you act like if you are a celebrity, you have to understand that you can't have the same.
But then why can Miley Cyrus and Demi? Why can Miley Cyrus and Demi Lovato go on Instagram live and talk about how they've been friends and how, like, grateful they are that where they are, where they are? I feel like we like to select who we drag.
I don't believe that. I think Miley is doing it in a way. Her resume says that she's also been in a lot of different communities and actually putting the groundwork there. Like, her foot has been on the pavement of helping a lot of these people. Demi has also been someone that has been very open and honest about his, like, her experience. And so I don't know. I think it's a mixture between Kendall Jenner being who she is.
I think that's right. Let's also preface.
Who she is as well.
I feel like we are quick to drag those two. Those could have been any other celebrities. Lady Gaga with Oprah saying the same thing, and they would not have been dragged in the same way.
I do think anyone at this moment, and we're seeing a lot of celebrities, and we have to wrap this up. We're seeing a lot of celebrities kind of just fail the messaging when they're trying to speak about COVID. And it feels like if you don't have anything to say that is actually worth something, that is going to help, you know, someone in this experience or help people be feel positive. I think you just shouldn't say anything at all. But let us know. Who do you agree with here? Hit us up at LGT Show on Instagram, social media. Also, more of the stories at WeirdChannelQ.com. And honey, I'm done spilling.
Yeah, well, I don't think Bieber and Kendall Jenner are the heroes of this next generation, but
yeah, I don't think so, anyone, but, I don't think
but anything is possible.
No one thinks that. That's the reason why.
I love how we just got into a deep debate on that. That just shows
because it fires us up.
Now, coming up, tips to parenting and homeschooling while keeping your relationship sane with a husband and wife who are also psychologists. They are so great. That's next. Staying at home is revealing a lot about family dynamics, to say the least. One, homeschooling is happening, which is a lot for parents. All of this also reveals who's a fun parent and who's the evil one or practical one. You know, the good cop versus bad cop situation. So how are you supposed to deal with this and keep peace at home and in your relationship? There's a lot there. We have psychologists who are also husband and wife, Dr. Liz Dexter Mazza and Dr. Jim Mazza, joining us right now. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Now, there's a lot here to wrap our heads around, but I know that you're navigating this in your own practice and with what you're sharing right now on your own social media. So what are the key takeaways that you're trying to share with parents and families right now?
So I think the number one thing we're sharing with families, and we do this ourselves with our own three kids, is first, providing grace, compassion, and kindness to yourself. Like, as the most important thing. Like, it's so easy for us to get caught up in the judgments of I'm the worst parent, I'm a horrible teacher, all these things that just make us feel worse and increase the intensity of our emotions. So that's the number one thing, is to practice being non-judgmental and providing yourself with grace and kindness.
Yeah, I think number two, I'd say, is that don't try to be in the same roles that you were in before COVID-19. So we have what we call accepting reality skills. And it's really hard because this is a very different reality. If we keep thinking about, I'm going to go back to the old times, all we do is get frustrated, right? Because our kids don't see us that way either. And so there's a lot more time that's being taken up because of our kids. We're with them 24/7 now. A lot more time that our partners need. And sometimes they just need distance, right? And so it's really a matter of communicating and sharing and recognizing that this actually is a different time. So those roles and responsibilities that you had before, bring that bar down so you don't feel like you have to achieve everything that you used to do, and then plus all the things now for COVID-19.
So that really feels like it's surrounded in a lot of communication. Like, you have to be as transparent as possible. You know, I would assume you should be always, but especially right now.
Absolutely. Like, transparency and communication between partners and also just between parents and kids, I think, is really important. I always think it's important to model, as a parent, if I'm having a hard day and what are the emotions I'm having a hard time around, so that my kids can see that I don't always have it all together, as a way of, you know, because they're struggling through this now and they're looking for us for guidance around their own emotions.
Yeah. Wow. And what's that balance between showing them that and being real and then not putting that burden on them?
So I think that even at a young age, even our toddlers can get when a parent is having a difficult time. And I think if you're clear with them and say, hey, I'm struggling today, I'm hoping it's not impacting you. I need some support from you to help with, you know, putting your blocks back away or putting your crayons away or helping just kind of stay focused. They get that they want to be a part of the team. I mean, it makes them feel more adult-like and so forth. And they want to help out. So they might, your little ones might bring over a blanket for you, right? And you're just like, oh. When we say a lot's going on, they really rise to the occasion. Or if we're having a bad day, they actually usually step in and they can give that to us, right?
I was like sitting here thinking about this, and when I'm looking at the scale of a developmental stage, we've never lived through a pandemic at any point of our lives. So how do you think this is going to impact children, our teenagers, kind of in the midst of this in their developmental stage?
I think it's going to be kind of similar to other kind of collective community traumas that have occurred, like where there's going to, like we used to say, like pre-9/11 and post-9/11. I think we're going to say pre-COVID-19 and post-COVID-19.
Yeah.
And, you know, and for these young kids, this is that first experience of it. And so I think as much as parents, educators, adults, we're talking about the emotions and what this looks like, and we're starting to prepare for when they do go back into community, because I think that's going to be the hardest part.
that's going to be traumatizing. Yeah.
And worried about getting sick, talking to people. You're going to see like somebody sneezes in the hallway and, you know, students are potentially going to have these big reactions.
Yeah.
And how are we as adults going to provide that supportive community that's non-judgmental and kind of helping them manage through that anxiety is going to be a big deal.
Yeah. And I think there's another side to that too, Ryan, is that our kids for the first time might start to learn that their parents are kind of fun, that they get to hang out with them a bit more. Right?
Oh, because, fun. So yeah. not the other side. Because I think other parents might be like, okay, I feel like I can't be fun now. I have to create rules and all that.
Yeah,
and
structure.
Well, right. So, I mean, for our kids, I mean, we were getting them up at 7 o'clock in the morning. There were times I'm leaving at 7:30. I don't get home till 7 o'clock at night. And Liz is busy. I mean, all of a sudden our kids learn that, oh, mom and dad, or mom and mom, or dad and dad are really busy, you know, and they don't have time for us. Now all of a sudden it's like, oh, COVID-19 says, hey, my parents do love me. They do like to hang out. They can be kind of fun at times.
Yeah.
They can be annoying at times too, and fun. And
so it's this level of realizing that your parents are just humans. Like, we're all just human in this moment that feels unprecedented.
Yep.
Yeah. Wow. And we're trying to find some balance right now for us. And we've been talking a lot about this on our parenting live stream, about what are our goals and values for this COVID-19 period. Like, our goal is not to just survive it, but how do we as a family thrive?
Thank you so much for joining us for that. And where can people find you? Because I know you are doing these live streams.
So on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday mornings at 7 a.m. Pacific time, we're on Facebook Live and Instagram stories for our DBT in schools webpage. And then on Tuesdays and Thursdays at 10 a.m. right now on Facebook Live, we are teaching a student skills for surviving and thriving during COVID-19 and beyond, which is our social emotional learning class for children and families so they can learn the skills during this time while they're home.
Amazing. All right. And that's, what's the URL for that? Or
that one is on
username?
Facebook Live right now as well. Or you could find us on our website at dbtinschools.com.
dbtinschools.com. There you go. That's
no spaces. All one word.
That's easy and definitely worth checking out. Well, thank you again to Dr. Liz Dexter Mazza and Dr. Jim Mazza.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Now coming up, a Navy aircraft carrier that has been the center of controversy just reported its first death from COVID-19. Mm. Find out more next. It's time for some what's trending in the news right now, top of the hour. Now, airlines are starting to make shifts as the entire industry changes. Delta Airlines said that from April 13th through May 31st, it's going to actually block the middle seats in main cabin, Delta Comfort Plus, and Delta Premium Select across all flights. It's also going to reduce the number of passengers on each flight, but didn't provide specifics in that way. Delta said customers who prefer to be seated directly next to travel companions and family members should just contact reservations ahead of travel or talk to a Delta agent at the gate. Another change includes pausing automatic advanced medallion complimentary upgrades. So they're going to be processed at the gate. So anything that requires something custom, they're basically saying, like, you need to do that at the gate, because they want to make sure that customers are seated in a way that considers social distancing and aircraft weight and balance restrictions. This is getting real, folks.
Wow.
So they've been one of the airlines that have made a lot of changes in response to this pandemic that has reduced air travel worldwide and plummeted its revenues. And also that will change, which I'm pretty excited about, cleaning standards. They're also going to board customers 10 at a time instead of, you know, waiting in that line and it's just like an S show all the time. They're going to change food and beverage services, and they're going to allow customers to change their tickets for up to 2 years and extend benefits for their medallion members through 2021. So I'm sure we're going to see a lot of other airlines and how they're going to respond. Those announcements very soon, but that's what's happening from Delta.
Well, my thing is, I guess my question would be, how are people, when people are traveling with pets, how is that affecting them? Because I wonder if there's going to be restrictions, especially because of room requirements and things like that. Like, I wonder how that affects people that want to travel with pets. So who knows? I don't know. Those are some big changes that are happening, but I am very excited that they are taking social distancing or physical distancing into effect.
And it's also nice because in the end, we all know how packed people get on those airplanes, right? So unfortunately, because of this, it now allows for people to be more comfortable.
Yeah, it does.
From these airlines.
It does. And maybe that means, you know, airplanes start kind of redesigning how they are and start figuring that out. Yeah, who knows?
Look at you.
This could be interesting.
It is. Now, the first sailor from the Navy aircraft carrier that was at the center of, you know, we actually reported about this military and political controversy. This one sailor is the first one to have died from complications related to COVID-19. It's the first coronavirus death of a USS Theodore Roosevelt crew member. Now, about 585 members of the ship's crew, that the total crew is 4,800, had tested positive as of Sunday. That's a pretty big amount. And they were in a lot of political turmoil because their commanding officer, if you remember, Captain Brett Crozier, had written this memo a few weeks ago pleading for help from his superiors to keep the ship's crew safe from coronavirus. He said that we need to take measures to get them off the ship or do something because he was so worried. And now we're seeing the results of that. And hopefully there won't be anything else that happens, but you know, they have 585 members that have COVID-19, and who knows?
I mean, it is very unfortunate that it feels like a lot of people aren't taking or heeding the warnings as much as they should have in the beginning. And I think that's what we're seeing. And that's what we were just talking about, you know, Trump, did he do what he needed to do? And obviously he didn't. And so it's just trickling down into all these different types of communities and industries. And yeah, this is what happens. These are the effects.
Yep. Well, GMA anchor George Stephanopoulos has also tested positive for COVID-19, but thankfully he says that he is okay. He announced his diagnosis Monday on GMA. That's today, obviously, nearly 2 weeks after his wife, actress and bestselling author Allie Wentworth, confirmed that she tested positive for COVID-19.
About that. And I also learned over the weekend that my test came back positive for COVID as well, which is really no surprise given the fact that I've been here for a couple of weeks. But I'm one of those, I guess, cases that are basically asymptomatic. I've never had a fever, never had chills, never had a headache, never had cough, never had shortness of breath. I'm feeling great.
Wow. Okay. I guess that is a good thing that he's talking about it, because obviously he's asymptomatic. And I think that's what a lot of people need to hear, that guess what? You don't have to have the symptoms to get it. And I hope people understand that now. You know, the more and more we keep hearing other people have it, especially the people that we watch on TV every single day, maybe that'll like ring some alarms in people's brains.
You also don't know how your body's going to respond to it, which is why you don't want to play with fire. I should have mentioned this at the top of the show. I bumped into someone as I was not bumped physically bumped into, but I saw him from afar as I was walking. Okay, when I say that, now you need to like use a new term when you say bumped into someone. Girl. I saw him from like 20 feet away.
I don't know.
Walking. No. All right, Ryan, I swear I'm being real. All right. And he actually questioned my need for social distancing because I was giving in to like the government systems and all this like authoritarian stuff. And I was like, really?
Well, guess what? Course, you also live in Venice where the wackos live.
I know. But to be clear, though, I feel like the only people that have been questioning this, and we've talked about this, our specific age bracket of men. I'm not going to put an umbrella statement on this, but my experience has been men between 20-ish to like 40-ish or 25 to like 40-ish.
That's a huge gap. That is a huge gap.
Well, you could say millennial men.
Caucasian men?
My experience has been Caucasian men.
Okay, I just want to make sure. I just want to make sure, because I don't, you know, I don't know very many other black men in your life besides me. So I wanted to make sure, because it's not
at any
over
rate.
Here.
I said there's been a actually there wasn't just Caucasian men today. Another guy I talked to that's in his mid 30s also said, "Oh yeah, we're kind of casually practicing it. Like, stop casually practicing it. Practice it. Let's move on with our lives." Now, coming up, sorry for that random rant. It was in me and I got it out. Are you feeling worried about getting sick because the food you get from the grocery store or delivery, not just random people you semi-bump into? We break down the real risks when we return. You know, a big thing we talk about, Ryan, is we share how we eat at home. And I feel each person has their own strategy. You're either someone who orders in and obviously supporting local businesses, which is great, or you're someone that goes inside to the grocery store. Or I would say there's a third category. you've decided to do, or maybe there's two other categories. You decide to order and then pick up at the grocery store or get delivery from the grocery store.
That's very true. All those things are very true. I think for me, when I order out though, I more so just don't want to cook more so than I'm like supporting local businesses. But I think that's a really good spin on it.
That's too. The lazy excuse is also yours.
Yeah.
But the question is, which option is safer? But is delivery not safe? A lot of people have been saying that Uber Eats and Postmates, their companies haven't been really taking care of them, providing them with masks or gloves. And so is that an issue? And so with us right now is Dr. Ben Chapman, who's a professor and food safety specialist at NC State University. Dr. Ben, thanks for being here.
Thanks. I'm really glad to be here and be able to contribute to your conversation.
Yeah. Hope you enjoyed our rant about our food right before this. So I guess, is there one way that's safer than the other?
So the biggest thing, really the biggest threat in this entire outbreak is being around people. And so really what we want to focus on is limiting the total amount of time that I'm interacting with a person. So whether it's takeout, whether it's pickup, curbside, that really, it's, you know, neither is safer or less safe than others. What I'm thinking about when I'm going to get food, whether it's at the grocery store, if I'm picking up, is really how do I limit just being around people? And sometimes walking around the grocery store for 20 minutes, you know, as I've done probably 5 times in the last 3 weeks, that is riskier than getting something delivered to me because I'm around more people.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, like I think actually for me going to the grocery store and I have asthma, it actually gives me a little bit more anxiety because I've realize that people still don't know what social distancing is, especially at the grocery store. And you don't want to be that person where you're being dramatic, where you're like, please move. But also it just seems like ordering out and delivering, people like my family members, like my mom is saying, well, you shouldn't do that either because you don't know who's preparing your food.
Yeah.
So what about that aspect? Delivering it.
Well, and that's, I guess, where we've got a bit of a bonus right now is that we have no information, no data, no evidence that food or food packaging are really a risk factor for getting COVID-19. So it's not to say that the virus couldn't be on that packaging, but we don't have any evidence that that's causing any illnesses. And really, it's because people are, I think, on much more heightened awareness around hand washing. And so we've got a step, you know, even if this individual was asymptomatic and happened to cough or talk really close to your food or whatever, we just don't have any evidence that that's causing illness. And what is causing illness is me being next to someone, like you said, Ryan, at the grocery store, where all of a sudden someone's in my like 6 foot, you know, radius. Social distance. Yeah. But
why would there be a difference between the food you're eating and then being able to contract it from someone who's just next to you?
So it really has to do with the biology of how the virus is transmitted. And so the virus gets to us through moisture droplets that are then inhaled into our respiratory system. And food doesn't go into our respiratory system. So even if there was a virus on food, it gets into my stomach. The pH, the high acid of my stomach is really going to blow apart that virus. Particle. So it's actually not just the epidemiology, but also the virus biology that really is pointing to food. It's not to say that it's zero risk. We always have a risk, but it might be 1 in 10 billion. It might be 1 in a billion, but it's definitely not 1 in 10 yeah. or 1 in 6 like we're seeing like being around people.
So do you see the food service industry or just even the food safety industry changing because of COVID-19?
So I don't really think so. I think what we've really tried to do, and you know, what I do is kind of support the food service industry and the grocery industry about science and do a lot of education. I think what we have seen is the reduction in high touch surfaces. Like one of the very first things to go out of grocery stores were hot bars, where someone might come along, grab a spoon, and there was no hand washing. So that might change, you know, until there's a vaccine in place, we might not have hot bars or buffets. But
those are unsanitary. It felt unsanitary anyway.
To begin with, I don't like a buffet. Buffets are so nasty to me because of that.
Yeah, it is like there's definitely more exposure. And so I think we will see those go away for quite some time for other reasons. Norovirus and E. coli. There are other things that we worry about there. I think the restaurant industry is really focused on safety already, making sure that their employees aren't coming in to work while ill, because if they are, then all of a sudden their entire restaurant's closed down. So I don't think there's going to be a lot of widespread stuff, but a little bit of change.
Well, I hope so, because sometimes I do go into some restaurants where I'm like, I don't know, like how much people are actually staying clean, washing hands or masks. I feel like masks will be a new thing. Maybe.
I used to be a server, so I low-key kind of understand the food service industry. Like, it can be very sketchy sometimes.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
It's like, I agree. Dr. Ben Chapman, thank you for being with us again from North Carolina, but a fellow Canadian. So I always appreciate that. Now, coming up with hospitals at high capacities, many people are facing delayed and canceled treatments. So we're going to be taking a look at what this means for cancer patients across the U.S. when we return. Now, cancer treatment is stressful under any circumstances, but those fighting the disease right now have to undergo, as you would imagine, additional precautions and sometimes even delays. Oncologists are trying to figure out the best plan while also keeping patients safe during this COVID-19 pandemic. And now joining us right now, we have Damiano Rondelli, Chief Division of Hematology and Oncology, Director of Blood and Marrow Transplant at the University of Illinois at Chicago, UI Health. Thanks so much, Damiano, for being with us today. I know how busy you are.
My pleasure. Hi.
Hi, how are you, by the way?
I'm good, thank you. Very busy here.
Oh, I'm sure. And he's actually calling us from the hospital right now. How is it working? How are you treating cancer patients? And is there less staff? Because a lot of the staff are working on other patients with COVID-19.
Well, we have to kind of reorganize the whole practice. As you obviously understand, cancer patients on one side need to be treated, need to be seen. On the other hand, they need to be protected because they are very vulnerable and at risk of COVID. So we have changed our practice by keeping doctors at home at least some time, alternating each other, keeping people on the bench because some of them will be infected and the other will be ready to jump in. So there's an inpatient and an outpatient setting that has different structure. Patients with cancer, depending on where they are, the stage that they are, they may be delayed in treatment or in assessment if they have been doing okay. But they cannot be delayed if they have a new diagnosis or very difficult cancer to be treated. So it really depends on the people and depends. The surgery is less has been less utilized recently because of the risks. Patients with cancer have a high risk of pulmonary infection. Wow. And that's why COVID is very risky. We do continue bone marrow transplant in patients with leukemia because the risk benefit, it's in favor of the treatment versus the waiting time.
And your immune system also is at stake when you are getting treatments, whether it be radiation or chemo, your immune system is not good. So that is also a huge risk.
Correct. And that's why for some patients, we try to delay the chemotherapy if we can. Or so there are some patients who have been on chemotherapy for a long time, and they can be delayed by a month or so without any risk, and actually avoiding the risk of being infected here. So it really depends on what type of cancer, what type of treatment.
Wow. So I guess with people having to come to the hospital, it feels like they are actually more in danger than they already are. And are you seeing, you know, people shift towards home treatments, honestly, at this time? Or is there any way to even do that?
We try to shift to home treatment by basically giving oral therapy, like pills. And we have established a very, I think kind of well-organized telehealth system to follow the patient via phone or via video and try to keep them out of the hospital as much as possible. Those who need to come to the hospital because of the IV chemotherapy, they are protected. We have organized like a very protected area where they can be treated, limiting the risk of infection.
So also, I know a lot of times when, you know, patients are either going through chemo, they have their families around. Have you also cut off the family connections of people being around that don't need to be?
Yes, that's a very, very sad thing, but unfortunately is inevitable. Patients who come to the clinic or to the hospital cannot have visitors. So especially when they are admitted to the hospital, they are on their own. And that is creating a lot of you know, mental stress and fear. And it's very hard for us. Actually, our nurses kind of become the family of these patients.
Wow. That's, I'm sure. And are you guys trained to do this? I mean, it seems like you're just taking on already a lot, and then you add that
the mental health capacity
to
the, of it.
Yeah, yeah, like there's mental health issues, I think, on both sides for the patients, but then also for the doctors and nurses.
You know, I thank you for you. I'm thanking you for this question, because one thing that people are realizing now with COVID, or what the nurses do and doctors do, it's not new. They always done that.
Yeah.
You know, that's what the mission, especially the nurses, I admire the nurses so much, because that's what they have been doing all their life. And now is visible. Now is actually more clear, but we have not been trained, but we do it because that's what, who we are.
Mm. Oh my God, you just got, I almost fell
asleep. I mean, Ryan, that was really emotional.
No, it's true. Like, wow. That's why a lot of people are saying that nurses and doctors, they should have their education paid for, because what you are doing is a service to the country.
Well, that's another topic for another day.
I mean, it really is. I do want to say, though, you know, I feel like also, and I don't know if this is actual scientific, you know, treatment or scientific research has been kind of involved in this, but mental health for a lot of cancer patients going through chemo is a very important part, right? Like keeping their spirits high, because yep. In some ways that really does play a part in the medicine doing what it needs to do for, you know, the body, I would assume.
Absolutely. And there is some support. There is some support from mental health, from the social workers, which is another very strong component of the care. But yet, in this time, it's hard, not only on the patients, but also on the providers. There are services in the hospital to help you know, nurses or doctors who need help or looking for help from mental health specialists.
All right, well, this has been so interesting. Coming up, we want to get into alternative treatments if people are scared to go to the hospitals right now, and also what resources are out there to help those who are dealing with this. That's next. For some patients, oncologists say it's best to postpone surgeries or treatments and replace clinical visits with virtual ones. But others must continue because, as Dr. Damiano Rondelli says, who is our guest, cancer is a disease that does not wait. He is with us right now, Chief of the Division of Hematology Oncology at University of Illinois Hospital in Chicago and Director of its Blood and Marrow Transplant Program. Thank you again, Dr. Damiano, for being with us today.
My pleasure.
So with hospitals being full, where are cancer patients going to look for alternative treatments, or where are you able to do all of this?
Well, I don't know if it's alternative treatment or alternative option.
Absolutely.
Or whatever they have. There are patients who actually are asking us not to come or not to be treated right now. It really depends on the type of tumor and the type of treatment that is necessary. There are definitely some therapies that can be changed for a little while with oral chemotherapy, oral immunotherapy, while the patient can wait for the IV infusion or the IV chemotherapy to be given when it's safer to come to the hospital. There are patients actually who got chemotherapy before and right now are only on what we call maintenance therapy, which is a light chemotherapy that is meant to maintain the response to the cancer. These can be prolonged for a little bit longer if it's an oral therapy, or can be put on hold for a while and still be safe. So those are things. But then on the other hand, there are treatment that cannot be delayed. An acute leukemia or a bone marrow transplant for a disease actually requires a treatment. Otherwise, the patient, the cancer will come
back. Yeah, it's aggressive. I mean, what are people supposed to do? My friend Taryn, who has actually been on the show before, she just got through chemotherapy and was doing radiation, and she's also doing some things to sustain the treatment, or what did you say?
Maintain it.
And she had to go in without anyone. Luckily, she has another friend going through it, so they sit next to each other.
Oh, wow.
But she was very fortunate because no one's allowed in, whereas we used to go with her and hang out with her because it's a very traumatic process.
Yes, it is. But sometimes, you know, there's no option. I mean, if you have to put on the same, the cancer versus all the other things. And sometimes you can wait, sometimes you can be happy, sometimes you have to get it, and there's no way to go around it.
Well, let's talk about the flip side of this, because I would assume as well, people that were even wondering if they possibly may have cancer, you know, if they were coming in to get checked, that is now stopped. Do you think there's going to be a huge rise in possible people that after this is all over, that come back and find out that they are unfortunately, you know, tested positive for cancer?
This is a very good question. Possible. I think it's possible that some patients may right now, you know, wait because they don't want to be tested, especially screened, or the women who need to have a mammogram or other testing, they may decide to wait. For some of them, there may be the risk that a surprise will happen later. But again, it's very hard right now to decide what is the best option because you don't want to get infected.
Especially this is unprecedented. This is unprecedented times. You can't plan for this.
On the other hand, though, we are hopeful that this is not going to last so long. That, you know, if you wait to screen for your screening like a month, may not be very, very risky.
And so finally, what resources or tools are out there for people to find help right now if they need it?
Well, I mean, we are available, so patients can reach out to us either via phone or via, you know, emails or calling the hospital. We're not preventing anybody to reach out to us and asking questions, advises, and we're very happy to see them if they have to. We are open. Nothing has stopped. We're just trying to be as protective as possible towards our patients.
All right. Well, Dr. Damiano Rondelli, thank you again for being with us today and taking a break from your very busy schedule.
Okay. Have a good day.
You too. Have a great day. Dr. Damiano, again, is the chief of the Division of Hematology Oncology, Director of Blood and Marrow Transplant at the University of Illinois at Chicago UI Health. Now, coming up, severe storms ripped through the South last night. The latest with our What's Trending in the News, top of the hour when we return. It's top of the hour, which means what's trending in the news time. Now, at least 28 people died and hundreds of thousands were left without power after violent storms swept through the South yesterday. Alabama, Louisiana, and Mississippi all declared a state of emergency yesterday in response to the storms, which included several powerful tornadoes, flash flooding, and large hail. God, what a...
I mean, what's actually happening here? I know we joke. I know we joke about this being the end of the, the end of the world. But I just am so sad to hear that the South is going through this. And also, I know something about in Tennessee, there was something else that was going on.
Nashville before this, as this happened, there was a horrible storm as well.
Yeah, there was. I mean, it was a devastating tornado. But I know there's in Chattanooga, which is about a couple hours outside of Nashville. Mm-hmm. They're experiencing some terrible weather as well. So I don't really know what's going on with everything happening around us. But I just want it to stop because we don't have time to worry about all these things all at once. It just feels like everything's kind of crumbling. It's really sad. And I'm sending love to all these people's, you know, families.
Yeah. Including in the midst of this, with jobs unemployment and being worried about just paying the bills and then adding this to it. I can't, and just the fear of getting COVID, that is traumatizing, man. So yeah, we are sending all our love and prayers.
You know, Louisiana is the is one of the number one spots of where COVID-19 is running rampant, and so it just sucks that they also have to deal with, you know, weather as well. It's just what is going on? I don't know. It's just a big ball of confusion. I am.
All right. Well, let's move on to Ticketmaster, who. They are being dragged right now because of this.
Trending everywhere.
Yes, they have quietly updated their refund policy, and they're no longer going to refund money for postponed or rescheduled events amid this whole COVID-19 crisis. So as you can imagine, people are freaking out and not liking this whatsoever. No one is going to support this decision. The ticket distributor now only covers cancellations in their refund, while the old policy promise refunds for events that were postponed, rescheduled, or canceled. There's a recent modification that now covers cancellations only.
Which is annoying because a lot of, you know, concerts and singers and artists are just postponing their stuff. And they're like, oh, we're moving the dates. But you're also not giving people the opportunity to say, well, I don't know if I'm going to be able to go then. So can I just have my money back? Can I use my money for something else? And they're just basically taking that option away from them.
Well, because they're probably one of many companies that might go bankrupt because of this. And what I'm hearing from a lot of big companies, there's just known fact is that no one really had pandemic insurance because this has never happened. Now they're probably going to add that, but it's now it's happening. So it's not like they can call up their insurance and say, hey, can we get this insured? Can we get our money back or figure this out so we don't basically lose everything?
That's probably they will not get any money back right now. The insurance industry, because they're like, we don't have to spend no money.
Yeah, but after this, everyone's going to be trying to protect themselves. It'll be interesting to see what happens. Actually, we should have an insurance conversation after this. But because they're losing money, unfortunately, it's impacting the customers as well. And yes, I was about to mention that comedian Kathy Griffin tweeted, customers are already fed up with what appears to be a single monopoly with Ticketmaster. Customers are not going to be happy with this decision, and they are not. Now, Virginia Governor Ralph Northam announced yesterday that he has signed into law several measures meant to expand voting rights, including making Election Day a state holiday. We've been waiting for this. In addition to the holiday law, the legislation that he signed expands access to early voting, repeals Virginia's strict voter ID law, and adopts automatic voter registration. All very good things. And he adds, voting is a fundamental right, and these new laws strengthen our democracy by making it easier to cast a ballot, not harder. So go him. I mean, that's really good stuff. Something that needs to be implemented all across the country. Now, coming up, how some corporations could be taking advantage of helping us all get back to what some are calling the new normal. That's next. Now, as we get through this pandemic and hopefully get to the other side, some are thinking that a lot of brands and companies that will be hunkering down on getting us all back to normal. As this one Medium post noted, prepare for the ultimate gaslighting. And we already see it in the commercials right now and ads on social media. I mean, there are companies that are doing well. There are new companies that are launching services. And I definitely do believe some are important. And I don't think that's bad. And capitalism isn't necessarily bad, but gaslighting, that's the question. Are we going to experience that? So clinical psychologist Josh Klapo is back with us as we dive in. Thanks again for being here.
It's my pleasure, guys. Deep, deep article.
Yes, this is very nuanced, and it's also a really interesting topic.
It is.
First, a lot of people throw on the word gaslighting, but can we define gaslighting for the purpose of this conversation?
So if you think about gaslighting in terms of a one-to-one relationship, which is where the movie was and what people think about it, it is basically one person trying to alter somebody else's perception of reality so that they think they are losing their minds. So it's basically saying, no, you didn't, this is where it came from. The lights are not on when the lights are on. Something's terribly wrong with you. I don't know why you would see things this way. If you would see them this way, then you'd be normal, but you don't. So you must be losing your mind. It's basically playing with somebody's reality. And that's gaslighting from an individual basis. And now, you know, when you get to corporate America, it's a little harder to define it that way.
Well, the one thing
marketing.
It's marketing.
I guess the one thing that I loved about this article, though, it really talks about the vulnerability and kind of the trauma that we're all experiencing as a whole right now. And I think it brought up that something that I feel like a lot of people, possibly even before this, they didn't even realize like a lot of things about, oh, the healthcare system is fine. You know, people feeling like they're taking care of small businesses, all that stuff is fine. And I think now the blanket has kind of been removed from everyone's point of view, and everyone kind of has like this realistic view now. And I do think it shows how everyone is on the same page. But when we get back, you know, maybe, you know, 3 or 4 months down the line after all this is over, our society is either going to, and our corporate society is either going to say, all right, let's get back to the normal. When honestly, that's where I feel like the gaslighting comes into play, where you're saying, let's get back to normal, but nothing is normal now. We can't have what was. We have to figure out what's the new.
We can't pretend like nothing happens.
Yes.
Just because it will help us all get jobs and the economy will be better again.
So what do you say to that?
Well, it's exactly, it makes sense. It makes sense, if you will, in terms of playing on our fragility, as emotional fragility. So we're going through this trauma, okay? And we're going to come out the other side and it's still going to be fresh and raw, if you will. And so if there's a message that says, you know what, we've made it through, let's go back to normal. Let's have toilet paper for everybody and do things the way we used to do. A natural inclination is to go, oh yes, thank God. Well, you know, it's okay, back to the way it used to be. I mean, that's natural. But the problem, here's the problem. This is not a trauma, just a trauma that we can pack away. This is a new experience of reality. It wasn't a one-time event that we can try to forget. We're living this way. So here's where the challenge is going to come for corporate America. And it's much like Ryan was saying, they're not going to be able to necessarily say, oh, well, don't worry about that. We're going back to normal. Well, we've been living the old normal now for long enough that we may be calling it out and saying, that's not necessarily the case.
And also what we've learned, I feel like we've learned so many things that can change what we see and what we do going forward. I think this moment has been a very teachable lesson, you know?
And it was, you know why? Because it's not a moment. And this is what I've been saying to lots and lots of folks. And I'm going to use this comparison, and I hope people don't get upset about it. But 9/11 was a moment. I mean, it was a long moment, and there was lots of aftermath. But it was an event that was over, okay? And lots of trauma afterwards. Even some of the hurricanes, Katrina, was multiple events, but then it was over. We've been living this trauma, okay? We've been adapting to this trauma, and it's been going on now weeks, months. And so what happens is it no longer is an event that's over. It's just the way that we live. One other quick point, and I've talked about this with y'all. They're not going to all of a sudden say, okay, everything's done. We're good. Everyone can come outside now. So the trauma is not going to just end. Yeah. We're going to just have to slowly adapt. And what that means is we can't unsee what we've seen, and we're never going to go back to what was. I'm not saying what we're going to is bad, but this idea that we can go back to where we were, we can't. It's there. You can't change your mind. You can't make it go away.
Definitely. There's a lot to be learned and to process right now with everything. So clearly the question coming out of this is, are we ready for a new normal? And is corporate America ready for a new normal? Dr. Josh Klapo, clinical psychologist, joins us for that coming up next. When this is all over, are we ready for the ultimate gaslighting? We've been talking about that. And is that even going to happen? Or are we just all scared of what this new normal looks like? And what does it look like? Dr. Josh Klapo is back with us. He's a clinical psychologist. So, Dr. Josh, you have a lot of clients. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you're seeing or hearing this question come up a lot. How are people dealing?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think there is a desire to, I want things. I think what's shifted, Shira, is it's not I want things to go back to the way they were. It's, I want things to be okay now. I want to not have restrictions or as many of them. I want to be able to do what I want to do. But I will tell you that the longer we're in it, the more we're transformed. And what I'm telling clients is, look, you're learning about your own resiliency, your own grit, your own ability to be a better person, different person. And so when corporate America comes at us, if you will, when this is over, they can't ignore that. It's going to have to be a combination of, don't you remember when, I'm using this as an example, when you used to be able to get as much toilet paper as you ever wanted, now you can again. Like, you're going to be able to do that, but we're not going to be able to say, you know, we don't pay attention to diseases and viruses and all that kind of stuff. We're living through it. We're changed people, all of us, and that's good. That's not a bad thing.
Yeah, I agree. I do think this has obviously changed us for, to be honest, I'm not sure if it's the better or the worst. But I do think that it, like I said last segment, that it has really kind of unveiled these problems that we have been ignoring every day. How are people going to, and how are we as a society going to have to deal with some of the truths that we are now seeing about what we're living in and kind of these underlying things that we've, you know, like a lot of families do, they sweep a lot of things under the rug.
Yeah.
And I think we can't do that anymore. So how do we really bring that to the forefront and actually handle these issues now?
Ryan, I was saying it's called systemic sweeping.
That's right. That's beautiful. Well, so, but here's the thing. You can try to do that. You can try to do that at the individual level, family level. You can even do it in corporate America. Oh, our hospitals are fine. Everything's fine. It's all fine. Some people will buy into that. The problem is enough of us have seen the cracks in our relationships, the cracks in ourselves, the cracks in our healthcare system, the good, all of that, that you're better off using that to be your launching point. Okay, so we got some problems in the family. Let's deal with them. Okay, we got some problems in our healthcare system. Instead of trying to tell us that they don't exist, let's try to fix them because guess what? We all saw them. I mean, that's the point that I'm trying to make is enough of us have seen the problems in our lives, in our families, in corporate America for a long enough time that you're going to have a hard time convincing people to just go back. They're not going to go back because they can't. You can't unsee it when it's this much.
I think in terms of brands and companies we trust, there's going to be a new revolution, which is kind of weird to say because revolution is new, but that we will trust companies that are creating the things we want and love, but also that have compassion, corporate responsibility, that care about the world that we're living in, whether it be how they produce in a sustainable way, as well as their employee and company culture. I think it's interesting, like a company like Walmart, who had this great commercial about heroes and all their employees who are heroes and they're singing. It was a really amazing commercial, but someone brought up in my Facebook feed, like, are they doing this to kind of distract from the fact that they don't pay their employees enough? So they're heroes, but like, they're not even probably paying their employees enough.
I think that's what all these commercials are doing right now, right? I think we're seeing, you know, kind of, and I hate to call it this, but the propaganda of, you know, we're all here for you. We're all in this together. But I think, yeah, it's cute to have this good message tied to your company. But yeah, what are you doing? How is this actually affecting afterwards? Like, how is this affecting the people that work for you?
Everything that the three of us are saying right now is what the risk that these companies run, because they've put it out there. They've said these good messages. Enough of us have seen the problems that the companies have. And what you hope is that it influences some truth moving forward. Now, will it? I don't know. But I will say this, that it's been going on long enough. We were changed enough that it's going to be harder for these companies to say, oh, don't worry about all these problems we have. Don't worry about it. It's just too much change is going on for the majority of the population.
Definitely. Well, Dr. Josh Klapo, thank you so much for being with us again. We love having these conversations with you. And where can people follow you again on social media?
Instagram at Dr. Josh K, which is also the same for Twitter, or my webpage, joshklapo.com.
All right, a lot to think about here. Now coming up, making wishes come true during a pandemic. We find out how the Make-A-Wish Foundation aims to keep moving forward with our Yaz Queen of the Day next. It's time for our Yaz Queen of the Day.
Yes, Queen.
And we love wrapping up the show on a positive note. This one goes to Make-A-Wish Foundation. We all know the organization. They do great work, but they're now launching Messages of Hope, a campaign to encourage kids during the coronavirus pandemic. Because as you can imagine, a lot of what they do is travel and bringing wishes to children wherever they are, but it's harder now during this time. So Jamie Sandys joins us right now to tell us more about this. He's a senior manager of brand communications and PR for Make-A-Wish America. Thank you, Jamie, for joining us.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so we love what you do. So thank you for continuing to do this work during this crazy time.
And let me tell you this, getting a Yes Queen award is just like getting an Oscar. I have to let everyone know this. It's a very big deal. Yes, exactly. So you're welcome. Even though you're Make-A-Wish.
I didn't prepare an acceptance speech. I hope that's okay.
Just go with the flow. Yeah. So, Jamie, tell us about this new initiative.
Yeah. So as you mentioned, you know, right now is a really difficult time for everyone, but especially for many of our Wish kids. Because of the coronavirus, we've had more than 2,400 wishes that have had to be postponed temporarily. Wow. And what that means is that these kids have already been going through a really challenging time, and it's continuing to be challenging for them. And we want to do something really uplifting and hopeful that we can give them something to look forward to. And so what we came up with was the idea of Messages of Hope. And what this is it's a campaign that allows people from the comfort of their homes to write, record, photograph a message, share it on social media with the hashtag #WishesAreWaiting and tag Make-A-Wish. And that'll be something that these kids can see as a way to encourage them and give them motivation to push through this difficult time, because they know that hopefully soon their wish will be granted.
Well, that's the thing, because a lot of the wishes that I am familiar with is like, you know, the trips to Disneyland or Disney World. But what kind of wishes can you fulfill at a time like this?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked that, because there are quite a few wishes that are still happening. There's 77% that involve travel, and those are the ones that have had to be postponed, as well as any others that we felt just would put the kids in a place where they wouldn't have their health and safety as our top concern. But there are wishes that can still happen, and the ones that are happening are still able to move forward in even if it's just small increments, whether it's, you know, helping to move some of the logistics forward or helping to get all the details in order so that once normal operations resume, we can make sure to grant those wishes in a really high quality as quickly as possible.
Mm. Yeah. And I'm sure you're in touch with some of the kids, and they each have their own unique stories. What are they sharing right now? What have you been hearing?
Yeah, that's what's been one of the most inspiring parts of this whole Messages of Hope campaign, because yes, we've had some celebrities that have gotten involved, and that's always fun to see. But what we're really enjoying seeing are the Wish alumni, who are adults that at one point had a wish granted when they were kids. And now they've experienced the power of a wish firsthand, and they can speak from their experience to these Wish kids about the importance of the wish and why it's so important that they stay hopeful and optimistic for their wish to come true.
I'm like, do we need to get emotional right now? Actually, real quick question, though. So is Make-A-Wish, do they have different sectors across the country? Because I see that this is Make-A-Wish Maine that is launching this as well.
Yeah, so all of our chapters, we have 60 of them across the country, and they're all responsible for granting these life-changing wishes within their local territories.
Mm.
Well, I guess as we wrap this up, how can people get involved right now? You kind of mentioned that at the beginning.
Yeah, Messages of Hope is a great way to participate. It's very family friendly. It can be done from the comfort of your homes. Write, record, share a message of encouragement to these Wish kids who are waiting for their wishes to be granted. Post it on social media with the hashtag #WishesAreWaiting and tag Make-A-Wish, and we'll make sure that those get to the Wish kids so that they can inspire them to stay strong. There's also a wonderful feed of all of these messages that is on our website at wish.org/messages of hope with hyphens in between messages of hope. And so that people can stay up to date on what encouraging messages have been shared.
Oh, love that. Well, let us know what happens. We're here to continue supporting this cause. And thank you. Love it. Well, Jamie Sandys is, again, the senior manager at Make-A-Wish America, wishing you all the best. Stay safe and stay healthy. And well, that does it for today's show, but we've got a big week coming up here on Let's Go There. We have Rebecca Black. You might know her from the viral hit Friday. She's not joining us on a Friday, but she recently shared with everyone that she is queer.
Yeah.
So we'll be talking to her and having her on the show. Plus, Victoria Monet will be joining us, singer-songwriter, and Ariana Grande's best friend.
Oh, I love it. And she's so sweet. And she has a new song out. And I love it. I love it. I can't wait.
Amazing. If you missed any of today's show or any of our shows, we post it as a podcast on the radio.com app. Just search Let's Go There and subscribe so you're notified when we post new episodes. We are sending you love and light.
And honey, remember to slay.
Have a great night.
Bye, y'all.